kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Eckert, put it in the wind tunnel.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get this hour underway. Happy Monday. It's Monday, December 30th. And we're underway on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Hi, Vix. How are we doing?
Hello, Patrick. How are we doing this fine Monday, December 30th?
I'm good. And you?
I am fantastic.
We have this and then Tuesday, and then 2024 is officially in the books. Got a New Year's Eve game that'll be on December 31st. Can confirm the New Year's game, Wedley, will be on December 31st this year. Flames and Canucks on Tuesday, then the calendar year is done. So we're doing some year-end content for you here on Flames Talk. On Friday's Flames Talk, we did the top stories of 2024, the top Flames stories of 2024. One of my favorite things to do at the end of every year has always been counting down the top Flames moments and the things that, you know, stood out the most over a span of 365 days. And that's what we're going to do this hour on Flames Talk. I'm looking forward to it. We've also got one more kind of year-endy thing that we'll do, and we'll do that on Tuesday's show. But to the top five moments of 2024, and this was not just me. You and I kind of collaborated on this one once again. Do you like the order I put them in? We kind of put these, threw these all together. Do you like the order I ended up putting them in when it was all said and done?
Yeah, I can live with it. I actually really like doing it in reverse order this time as well. Just to add to the grand allure of a countdown, like, let's go. I'm pretty excited about this one, I won't lie.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We'll go in reverse order, 5-1, of the top moments from the Flames or associated with the Flames.
Ooh, tease!
Yeah, we got a surprise for you that we will definitely get to. Before we start counting down, though, I wanted to start with this. I wanted to start on December 3rd at the Scotiabank Saddledome. I'm not going to put this in a countdown. That feels a little, just doesn't feel necessarily right to do that. But I don't think you or me or anybody who watched that game on television, listened to that game on radio, or who was in the building at the Scotiabank Saddledome that night, I don't think anybody's going to forget soon the night of December 3rd at the Dome after the tragic loss of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau in late August. It was the first time that Johnny's team, the Columbus Blue Jackets, had come to Calgary. It came just a few days after the Flames made their first trip to Columbus. And, you know, I'll remember Rasmus Anderson's goal for sure that night. I doubt I'll remember anything else from the game in terms of the actual hockey. The Flames won. I know that. I know Rasmus Anderson gave the salute to the Gaudreau box. But otherwise, like, it was all about the intermissions, the postgame, and the pregame ceremony is one of the most goosebump-inducing, memorable things I've ever been a part of. It was pretty special that night. I'll play you just a little bit of it. This was December 3rd at the Scotiabank Saddledome.
In a show of unity, we'd now like to invite Columbus Blue Jackets and your Calgary Flames to join the Gaudreau family at Center Ice for tonight's ceremonial face-off, which will be taken by Sean Monahan and Michael Backlund. We'd also like everyone in the Sea of Red, please turn on your cell phone flashlights, hold them high as we show our collective support for the Gaudreau family through light. For tonight's ceremonial face-off, the Gaudreau family will be using a beautiful hand-painted puck created by a young fan named Madden and left in tribute by Johnny on the steps of the Saddledome this past summer. To the Gaudreau family, on behalf of the Sea of Red, the Calgary Flames, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the National Hockey League, we continue to offer our deepest condolences. All together, Sea of Red, please join us in a moment of applause to show our love for Johnny, Matthew, and the entire Gaudreau family.
so glad that I got a picture from our spot up in the press box of the entire bowl with everybody's phone flashlights on, and Sean Monahan and Michael Backlund flanked by their teammates doing the ceremonial face-off with Guy and Jane and Meredith and Katie and Kristen on the ice with the kids. It was just with the entire bowl lit up and seeing that, like, it's one of those images that will be burned into my brain. Everything was so perfect that night. Everything was hit every note that you'd want it to hit for such a incredibly tragic thing that we were paying tribute to that night. So I don't want to put that in a top five countdown, but I did want to acknowledge that that might be one of the most memorable nights I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And when you listen back to that clip, it takes you back immediately from where I was, because I'm on the other side of the press box, opposite sides of the ice. And it just immediately, your mind goes back to sitting in the exact spot, observing it from the angle. Like, you just immediately relive it. And to your point, I'll never forget the face-off with Sean Monahan and Michael Backlund. And as you mentioned, all the family there. Johnny being named first star, Guy coming out with Rasmus Anderson and Michael Backlund.
Yeah.
Guy in the dressing room after the Flames posted a wonderful video of him addressing the team post-game. And you could have told me the Flames won by five, lost by five. I don't remember the result.
I know they won. That's all I...
But it's just the entire evening was one of those nights you'll never forget.
Yeah. And that's top moment that I've ever been a part of, for sure. And just incredible work by the Flames that night, and by both teams and
by the Sea of Red
and by the Sea of Red, who made it what it was. I'll never forget seeing Sean Monahan's close up face and that was like, I was totally together. I was like, this is amazing. Emotions are in check. And then it was like hit with a baseball bat right in the face when I saw Sean Monahan, and he was not doing so well with his emotions that night. And I don't say that as a criticism.
And yeah, not a criticism whatsoever.
Not at all. But like you saw him crying, and I was like, it was instant waterworks. It was a special night. So wanted to start with that and made sure that we put that like right kind of outside of our top five countdown. And now let's get to it. Let's count down the top five Calgary Flames moments of 2024. And we do this one partially in jest.
You can blame me if you want.
No, I think it's a good choice because I like, is it partially trolling?
A little bit.
Yeah, maybe a little bit trolling, but not 100% trolling, because if you're a Flames fan, had the night of June 24th, 2024 gone a different way, would have been a pretty miserable few months. In fact, it'd still probably be pretty miserable right now. Let's take you back to June 24th, number five on our top moments of 2024.
23 seconds left. 2-1 Panthers. Fans to their feet. Bouchard pass missed Dreisaitl. Down to our right. Forsling in the corner. He'll try and hold this. 10 seconds left. 2-1 Panthers. A dream 30 years in the making is a reality.
Whoa!
The Florida Panthers have won the Stanley Cup.
Lord Stanley is coming home. You always will have a place in South Florida. Oh, my God.
The Panthers have won the Stanley Cup for the first time in franchise history.
Yeah.
That was the Oilers radio. That was Oilers. No, that was...
How dare you?
That was Panthers radio. Panthers had a 3-0 series lead on the arch-rival Edmonton Oilers in the Stanley Cup Final, and Connor McDavid brought them all the way back to Game 7, and the Panthers took a 2-0 lead. The Oilers got one back. It made for a very tense last few minutes, but the Panthers held on, won the Stanley Cup, and made sure that the southern part of Alberta did not have to be miserable for the next season with the Oilers being Stanley Cup champions. That was a very, very big night for Flames fans.
Southern Alberta was Panthers country. I think that's probably fair to say. I'm sure there were some pockets that, you know, didn't like the result. But if you're a Calgary Flames fan, I don't know how that isn't in your top five moments of this calendar year.
Yeah. By the way, the color guy, Bill Lindsay, you can understand.
I can.
That's former Flame, by the way, Bill Lindsay. But he was best known for his time with the Florida Panthers. He was there the first of three times the Panthers made it to the Stanley Cup final when they got swept by the Avalanche in 96. Yeah. 96. Yeah, Devils won in 95, so the Avalanche in 96. Yeah, he was there for that. He's been associated with that market for a long time, so you can understand him being a little excited that night. And then, of course, we got this post-game from Matthew Tkachuk.
Just took a moment there to look out into the crowd after you hoisted that thing over your head. What were you thinking?
Sick of my family. You know, they're the biggest reason why I'm able to do what I do. Fiance, my parents, my brother, my sister. I've got such a great support, you know, system at home, and you know, so much great family everywhere. I mean, I've got my family in Boston, my family in Ontario, my grandpa Bada in Winnipeg. Shout out to all of them, and shout out to my fans in Calgary. So you know, I couldn't let Edmonton win.
Yes, just a classic Matthew Tkachuk triumphant troll. You know, I couldn't let Edmonton win.
What a pander. What a pander. He should never be booed again at Scotiabank Saddledome.
And he wasn't. He was not booed when the Panthers came through here and got blanked by the Flames. He was not booed that night. Didn't get like a rousing round of applause, but he wasn't booed.
He might not ever pay for a meal again in Calgary. I'm not sure he ever did, but shouldn't have to ever again.
The whole thing was, I mean, it really was objectively an epic Stanley Cup final.
Oh, yeah.
3-0 to 3-3, and then a great game seven. And that game seven was, whether you're cheering for the Oilers, whether you're cheering for the Panthers, or you were just cheering ABE, anybody but Edmonton, you were biting your nails.
Got your money's worth.
Boy, did you ever. You got incredible performances on, like, individual performances on both sides. Got great sound clips from the Amazon show from number 97 in Edmonton about digging in with a couple four-letter words in there on top of it. Like, it really was. It was great. And for Flames fans, the Oilers didn't win.
At the end of the day, what more could you ask for our, if you're a Calgary Flames fan? Again, you got the Edmonton Oilers, and you know what? I think from a Flames fan perspective, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but is it almost sweeter that Edmonton managed to climb back from 3-0 to force a game seven to lose in, like, crushing, heartbreaking fashion? Like, if you get swept in four, yeah, you're mad if you're an Oilers fan, player, management, yeah, whatever. Getting to game seven is more
close,
heartbreaking than it is frustrating or mad, I would suggest.
Text line, you knew you were going to get a few salty Oilers fans because we did that. This reads, Southern Alberta will always be miserable when it comes to hockey. It actually makes Oilers fans smile hearing how much the Oilers live rent-free in Flames fans' heads. Love it. You know, maybe, but you're allowed to cheer against your arch rival. It's not because they're living rent-free. It's because you don't want your arch rival to. I don't know how many Philadelphia Eagles fans are cheering for the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs. Like, it's like, I don't know how many Maple Leafs fans were cheering for the Habs in the weird Stanley Cup final against Tampa Bay. You know what I'm saying? Like, Yankees fans aren't rooting for the Red Sox when they're in the World Series. You cheer against the teams that you hate. I would want, if the Flames were there, I would want Oilers fans to be doing the exact same thing.
I mean, if you're an Oilers fan and the Flames find themselves in the final, turnabout is fair play. You can absolutely cheer for whoever the Flames hypothetically would be playing in a Stanley Cup final.
Mick writes, I could have sworn that was Bob Stauffer celebrating. What a troll from Mick. No, I don't think that was Stauff who was that excited. This Louis says, I love it. And Francesca just says, stop, with three laughy faces. That was number five. The Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup, or maybe more important, our number five moment. Edmonton does not win the Stanley Cup. June 24th was our number five moment for 2024. Okay, just 4 days later is where we go for our number four moment of 2024. Why is that the number four moment? Well, it's a pretty big moment for the Calgary Flames with their ninth overall selection at the 2024 NHL Draft. We take you back to Sphere, Las Vegas in late June.
First, I want to thank all the fans, our season ticket members back in Calgary at the original 16 draft party. And the Calgary Flames are proud to select at number nine from the Memorial Cup champs, Saginaw Spirit, Zane Parekh.
And drafting a player like Zane Parekh, who draft experts like Aaron Vickers of FC Hockey, NHLEntryDraft.com, had compared to some guy named Erik Karlsson, looked at him as maybe the most offensively high-powered defenseman in this draft.
Oh, not maybe. I mean, when you put 90-plus points up as a 17-year-old in the CHL, you're there.
And you get named the not just OHL, but CHL Defenseman of the Year. Yeah, there was a lot of excitement. And I think what drafting Parekh did for a lot of Flames fans is give you some hope that maybe they found one of their cornerstone pieces. They're still looking for their cornerstone center. We can all agree on that. Maybe they found their cornerstone goaltender in 2019 in the seventh round by drafting Dustin Wolf. I think that there's plenty to suggest they might have found that guy in Wolf, and maybe they found their cornerstone defenseman in Zane Parekh. Like, you take a look at different teams and you say, okay, Stanley Cup contenders, right? You know, the Stanley Cup contenders, they kind of have those three pieces, and you have and maybe not all the time. Maybe sometimes they don't have the goaltender, and, you know, Colorado won a Stanley Cup with Darcy Kemper, but then they had like multiple guys that are cornerstones elsewhere. Makar, McKinnon, Rantanen, you know, the Kings, Quick and Kopitar and Doughty, and the Panthers with Ekblad and Barkov and Tkachuk, and like, you know, you need multiple of those cornerstone pieces, and you don't always need one in each position, but right now the Flames have potentially one in net, and now with Zane Parekh, potentially one on defense. And that's what I think excited a lot of people about the Flames picking him at number nine. The ceiling, the high end, is just so out of bounds.
Well, and for me, putting Parekh on this list is more not necessarily about the player himself, but what it signifies. Because to me, it's the official sort of kickoff to the rebuild or the retool the Flames are undergoing. And we kind of refer to last season as year zero of the rebuild. The first season, Craig Conroy at the helm had to deal with several pending unrestricted free agents. So the season was sort of spent stripping those players off your roster. Largely, you were getting futures in return for the likes of Hanifin and Tanev and Lindholm, Zadorov, so on and so forth. And at the draft is when you finally were able to start putting some names to what those picks were in those deals. Zane Parekh wasn't involved in any of those trades, mind you, but it was the first high profile draft pick made after so many resources were shipped off your roster. And it just and this is no disrespect to Sam Honzik, who was drafted the year prior, but the selection of Parekh sort of, for me, kicked off that new mindset and pushed this team into what I would call year one of the retool.
And part of why I love this selection so much is because the personality they're bringing into the organization. Oh, yeah. As well, we know he is smart as a tack because we
graduated high school at 16.
Yeah, like we get all that stuff, but then like he's engaging and
swagger.
He's got swagger and an attitude and all, like, these are all good things. Like he's got a little bit of something that I think you need to be a high level athlete at the very highest level. And when he sat down with us on the draft floor at Sphere Las Vegas, a lot of things stood out, but like just the candidness mixed with the confidence. Like he said, I got to get better on my defensive game. And I asked him, how, like, did you make some strides this past season? I just want to play this clip from when he was sitting down with us on the draft floor, because I absolutely loved it.
How have you seen the defensive game come along, or the away from the puck play improve? You felt like you've taken some big strides there?
Yeah. I mean, you should have seen me at the start of the year. It wasn't too pretty. But I'll be honest, at the end of the year, I thought I really dialed it in. And throughout the whole year, it was just built in practice, to be honest with you. You know, the things you do in games start with your practice habits and how hard you're working there. So, you know, I think I'm going to be a capable NHL defender when it's all said and done and when I'm at my best. But you're not drafting me to defend. You're drafting me to be a dynamic puck mover.
Yep.
So, but, you know, I'm still running out that side of my game, obviously, and it's a huge thing for me.
I love that. You're not drafting me to defend. You're drafting me to be a dynamic puck mover. Like, give me that type of swagger all day. And I think, you know, the Flames drafted after that 9 more players, including Matvei Greden in the first round. But taking Parekh at number 9, I think, ignited a lot of excitement among Flames fans with the ridiculously high ceiling that he has in the NHL.
Well, it almost felt like a bit of a shift in draft philosophy as well, because you look at some of the players that followed him, and I think 6 of the 10 picks or 7 of the 10 picks made by Conroy and Todd Button at that draft are averaging over a point per game this season. It just, to me, signaled, okay, we're banking on skill, and the way we want this to work out is we'll figure out the rest of the roster and we'll round it out, but let's draft as many high-skill players as possible, see where they end up slotting, and we'll worry about the rest later.
That is our number 4 moment of 2024. The Flames draft Zane Parekh at number 9 overall at the draft in Las Vegas. The number 5 moment, we called it Edmonton doesn't win the Stanley Cup. It's Flames talk on this Monday. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you. We're on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This hour continues as we're counting down the top 5 moments of 2024 for the Calgary Flames. So far, your number 5 moment, Edmonton doesn't win the Stanley Cup. Number 4, the Flames drafting
Sorry,
Zane
that's just
Parekh.
So good.
June 24th, the Oilers don't win the Stanley Cup. June 28th, the Flames draft Zane Parekh. This one was a pretty big one. You and I both had it on our list, our rundown. Let's take you back not that long ago, but a month and a half ago. Let's take you back to November 15th after having a couple of opportunities to bank his first NHL shutout. Dustin Wolfe had it kind of ruined on him late in games. Like, there was game 82 last year.
Don't get me started on that one.
Where Marty Pospisil took a penalty that you didn't need to take. And
with two minutes left in the game.
Power play goal from San Jose shutout.
Against your childhood team.
And then a little bit later on this season, remember he made that incredible stop where he kind of reached back, but it was in the net. They reviewed it, and it was the right call.
It was the right call.
But it ruined the shutout late. I was against the LA Kings, I believe, and he didn't pick up a shutout that night either. But on November 15th, Daniil Miramanov had given the Flames a 1-0 lead in a very tight one against the Nashville Predators. Then Blake Coleman scored into an empty net very late, and the Flames had a 2-0 lead.
Yossi picking up inside of the Predators zone as Flames fans rise to their feet here at Scotiabank Saddle Dome. And the sea of red rises to celebrate Dustin Wolfe's first National Hockey League shutout. He wins an epic battle between the pipes with Juuse Saros, stopping all 29 Predator shots as the Flames win this game 2-0.
Dustin Wolfe's first NHL shutout after having a couple of near misses. He finally picked it up on November 15th of 2024, and that was a big moment because he had already been great. He had already proven, I think, that the NHL, I felt like he had proved last year that the NHL was the league that he belonged in. But then this year, it's been great, especially on home ice. And then he posts his first NHL shutout. That was a pretty special moment, and one that he won't forget. And as you noted when we were putting this together, also pretty interesting to talk about who he was on the other side of the ice against.
Yeah, getting it against Nashville in particular, UC Saros, who he's been compared to,
or who has
been the argument for a smaller goalie being able to not only survive in the NHL, but thrive in the NHL, just fitting how poetic hockey works sometimes. And I'm kind of cherry picking this as the moment that Dustin Wolf fully arrived in the NHL, because I, like you, kind of felt that it's not a prerequisite getting a shutout in the NHL to signify your arrival. But it just felt like the circumstance, him getting it coming against UC Saros. And Saros was very complimentary post-game. I was in the Predators locker room post-game. And, you know, it's kind of an inopportune time to ask your impression of the guy at the other end of the ice when he just beat you and shut out your team. But Saros, like a pro.
Now, they're used to it in Nashville by now.
Wow.
What a beat.
But very complimentary of Wolf. Had watched Wolf throughout his career, so it's no surprise to him. And it's just a little serendipitous how things work out. The guy that is the symbol or the icon for the small goalie in Saros being at the other end of the ice when the quote-unquote smaller goalie, again, quote-unquote, arrives in the NHL.
Yeah, it was good for him. He has just continued to put up numbers that you're impressed by. His home ice numbers, his even strength, and five-on-five numbers. And I don't think there's any doubt that Dustin Wolf belongs in the NHL. And it's funny because turns out that I think we've determined that this caller's a troll. But there was a caller on Saturday's postgame show that was talking, Dustin Wolf, I don't believe him. He's too small for the NHL. Now, in hindsight, this is the same guy that, suggested, I won't even talk about it because we cut it out of the podcast on Sunday's game. We're now, he's a troll, but it did ignite a lot of people on the text line before we were convinced of him trolling. A lot of people reacted to that saying, can we just enough of this narrative about Dustin Wolf being too small, enough of this narrative of him not going to be able to play at a high level in this league. That narrative is over. I think Kelly Rudy made this point on Hockey Night on Saturday. That's over. Dustin Wolf is he belongs in the NHL. I don't care if he's 6 feet or 5 feet or 6'5". This is the league that he belongs in. I don't know if he's going to be able to be a high-end goaltender over the course of 50-plus starts because he hasn't done it yet. I don't know if he's going to be able to do this year after year after year because he hasn't done it yet. But as of right now, nearing the end of the calendar year of 2024, Dustin Wolf doesn't belong in the American League, doesn't belong overseas. Dustin Wolf belongs in the greatest league in the world. He is a capable, effective, winning goaltender in the NHL. This is the league that he belongs. And the too short stuff, no, he's not too small for the NHL. He's not. Whether or not the disadvantages that go along with not being as tall as other goaltenders in this league are, whether or not that keeps him from being a bona fide, no questions asked number one, remains to be seen. But I think he's going to turn into a number one. I think he's going to turn into one of the league's best goalies. I really do, because everything I've seen at this level, in my eyes, proves that he belongs here. And at every level he's been at in his career, he's eventually figured it out to not just be a guy who belongs, but a guy who excels at the very highest level. And I'm expecting that to happen in the NHL, and I think it's already happening in front of us right now.
WHL Goalie of the Year, CHL Goalie of the Year, two-time American Hockey League Goalie of the Year, AHL MVP, and you look at his home numbers in the NHL, and he's right at home in the NHL. And you know what? The size narrative, I'm okay with parking now. There are going to be some shots that beat him based on his stature, but there's also going to be some saves he makes that he's able to make because of his ability to read the play, his lateral movement, his pure skating ability inside that blue paint. It's just a matter of what's his potential now. Not so much can he play in the NHL in my books.
Okay, let's move to our number two moment of 2024. And we kind of combined a couple of days here. We're going October 30th and November 1st for Michael Backlund's 1,000th NHL game and Michael Backlund's 1,000th NHL game celebration, because the lead up to October 30th with the Flames playing in Nashville was all about Backlund, all about him hitting that 1,000 game milestone, becoming the second player in franchise history to play 1,000 games as a member of the Flames. He played that 1,000th game in front of friends and family in Utah. They didn't play very well that night. They got blown out by the Utah Hockey Club. That kind of sucks that it didn't go Backlund's way for game 1,000. But ahead of game 1,001, Michael Backlund and the Flames were back on home ice, and he got some well-deserved recognition that night.
To present a special gift to Michael, please join me in welcoming two of his former teammates. He's the general manager of your Calgary Flames, Craig Conroy. Michael's achievement of playing 1,000 games with Calgary Flames is shared by only one other player. We're thrilled to have him here tonight. See it red, Jerome Aguilar. Craig and Jerome are presenting Michael and his family with a commemorative mosaic consisting of 1,000 photos from Michael's career in Calgary. Present Michael with a commemorative silver stick. Please welcome, on behalf of the Calgary Flames ownership group, Alan Markin. The silver stick has become a tradition for all players who have reached the 1,000 game plateau, one of the greatest symbols of longevity and perseverance in the National Hockey League.
So Michael Backlund got his silver stick on November 1st. He played his 1,000th NHL game on October 30th, and he now sits all alone, number two all-time on the Calgary Flames games played list. He had sat there for quite some time. He is now one of two players to ever play 1,000 games as a member of the Calgary Flames. And now, the question is, does he play 1,220? And if he does that, then he will become the all-time games played leader in Calgary Flames history, passing Jerome Iginla. Regardless, it's been a pretty incredible run for Michael. Now, we talked a lot about Michael on Friday when we did our top stories. This is the one that kind of hit both the top five moments and the top five stories. But pretty incredible run for Michael Backlund. And the fact that he's now over 1,000 games as a member of the Flames in his role, the way things started, the discourse over Michael in the first 5 years of his career, the fact that he's got 1,000 as a captain of the Calgary Flames. And there's a little bit of stick that in your pipe and smoke it there going on. Like, good for him for being able to get there this season.
It was a consideration when he re-signed in Calgary, because this wasn't a foregone conclusion that he would be sort of sticking around, at least based on some locker clean-out conversations we had a couple seasons ago. And lo and behold, he's got the C now. He's 193 away from tying Jerome Iginla for the most, 194 for surpassing. Already has the record for most seasons played. He's got 17, Jerome's got 16. But this is something that was not, it's going to sound stupid, this wasn't an overnight thing. Well, no kidding, it's 1,000 games. But there was a time when Michael Backlund phoned his agent and said, I'm going home. And that's eye-opening. Credit to his agent. He's like, no, you're not. You're sticking around. You're going to ride this out. Because it wasn't smooth sailing from game one to game 1,000. There were a lot of ups and downs, injuries, fourth line, minors, healthy scratch, and here we go. It's Michael Backlund. It's 1,000 games. Only the second player in franchise history to reach 1,000 games from 1 to 1,000 with the organization. And again, it's your captain that did it. How can that not be a top five sort of moment of 2024?
All right. Are we ready for number one? So to count them down, number five, June 24th, Edmonton doesn't win the Stanley Cup. Number four, June 28th, the Flames draft Zane Parekh. Number three, on November 15th, Dustin Wolf records his first career NHL shutout. And on October 30th and November 1st, Michael Backlund played his 1,000th and was celebrated for playing his 1,000th NHL game, all as a member of the Calgary Flames. So, our number one moment, we take you back to October 9th of 2024. After a very successful preseason, the Flames opened their regular season on the road in Vancouver, and it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare first period. They fell down 4-1 to the Vancouver Canucks, and this thing looked like it was going off the rails, and it looked like it was another opening night. It was like, ugh. Well, write that one off, see if they can win game two. Well, that was until Rasmus Anderson started the death stare trend with his goal on the road late in the second period. 4-1 turned to 4-2 after Rasmus Anderson gave the Flames a little bit of life and a little bit of momentum going into period number three. And then things went nuts.
Mantha to Pospisil, who shoots and scores. Martin Pospisil wrists the puck just inside the far goalpost. Don't turn off your radios yet. The Flames have made it a one-goal game. It is 4-3. And here's a shot by Uyghur. He scores! Right off the faceoff, Mackenzie Uyghur goes bar down and ties the game at 4. Dean walks the line and slips it near side. Bahal centers it in front, and they score! Jonathan Huberdeau standing in the blue paint. Backhands the puck by Archer Seelovs. Make it 4 unanswered for the Flames and a 5-4 lead. 1:40 to go. Here's Hughes. A stretch pass to Miller, who winds, fires, and scores. With his goaltender on the bench and an extra attacker on the ice, JT Miller lets one rip. Right into the top corner of the Flames net, and with 1:37 remaining in regulation time, the Canucks tie the game at 5. Here's Pospisil, left wing side to Zeri, crosses the Canucks' blue line. Zeri to the middle, to the backhand. Zeri dangles and scores! Wow! What a goal by Connor Zeri! He is the hero in overtime as the Flames complete an incredible comeback to start off the regular season. Down 4-1 following the first, they fight back and defeat the Canucks 6-5 in overtime.
Wow, that was a pretty fun way to start off a brand new season. And in so many ways, it kind of amplified the tone for the season. Because I don't want to say it set the tone, because I think the Flames set the tone for the season right at the beginning of training camp with Nazem Kadri telling us to beat it and pump the brakes. And I say that very respectfully. I loved it from Naz, but like, pump the brakes on the who doesn't want to be here. Like, let us play some games here. Pump the brakes. And heard some similar things from Jonathan Huberdeau and Michael Backlund about, yeah, guys, like, let us go out and play. We got a lot of confidence. I remember talking to Ryan Lomberg both on and off the air and him talking about how, like, people are sleeping on how, you know, how sneaky we can be here. And he said that on the air. Then I ran into him a couple days later and he was waiting to talk with somebody else. So he was just standing there beside me and he's like, we got some skill in there. Like, don't sleep on us. We're gonna surprise some people. And there was a real palatable feel for that going into the regular season. And then you do that. Then you go into Vancouver, raucous atmosphere. Canucks are feeling it. They've got a 4-1 lead. They've got a 4-2 lead after 40. And this one looked like it was going to be a ho-hum. Well, you know, Flames, maybe they are who we thought they were. And then they pull off that comeback. They take the 5-4 lead, and the JT Miller game-tying goal doesn't faze him. Connor Zeri scores one of the goals of the season for the Flames to win it 6-5 in overtime. And that just, I think, cranked the volume up. And they started their year 5-0-1, gave themselves a nice cushion that they still are using right now as they remain in this playoff fight. And I think that just, I don't know, let some belief grow inside that room. They believed, they were feeling good, and then you go out and have that type of game. You go out and do that to one of your arch rivals on the road. Yeah, that was a pretty impressive way to start the season. To me, that was the number one moment And there's a bunch of moments in there for 2024.
It was a belief builder, I think, for the Flames. And you're absolutely right where it didn't necessarily set the tone, because I agree with Kadri, Backlund, Coleman, Ryan Huska, even in training camp, going, hey, we're not really worried about anything that you guys happen to think on the outside. We don't care about predictions or prognosticators. We believe in what we have in this group. And it was an absolutely horrid first period in that game against Vancouver, and they fell behind significantly and looked like they were running around and they were trying to get revenge on JT Miller for a hit on Kevin Rooney. And then it all started to come together. And I think that helped reinforce the belief inside the room. They're able to overcome anything in game. And we've seen that sort of grow throughout the season, where the third period has been Calgary's best period this season. I don't think there's too much questioning around that. So when you are able to put an exclamation mark on game one of the 2024-25 season, punctuate it with a game like that against a division rival, against a team that only is up 1 point on you for the final playoff spot in the West, it's one of the, and arguably, I don't even know if arguably, but just in general, maybe the most exciting game in the calendar year 2024 in terms of how the script unfolded for us as viewers. I have no problem with it being the number one moment, especially, and you referenced it, especially because it sort of gave birth to the death stare of Rasmus Anderson, which is now a t-shirt, which, as I'm sure you saw, a Christmas fireplace video on Calgary Flames YouTube. Just phenomenal stuff. That myth, that legend, that stare is growing, it seems, with each and every Rasmus Anderson goal. So, special place in my heart for it.
I don't mind that at all. Yeah, it was fun to put together. I always like putting this together. There was the at least one honorable mention or one that almost made the cut, that Mackenzie Weegar hat trick. That was right there on the cusp. If we didn't go the Oilers route and didn't kind of do a little bit of trolling, that would have been right there.
First hat trick by a defenseman last season.
And that was in February of 2024 against the New York Islanders. He scored his hat trick. That would have been right there. Mackenzie Weegar scoring his first career hat trick. And some of his comments afterwards were pretty good as well.
Well, and ironically enough, it was the first hat trick by a defenseman in the NHL since Nikita Zadorov did it in game 82 in that game against the Sharks, where Dustin Wolf didn't quite get that shutout that we had talked about previously.
The other moment that just missed the cut for me was on March 2nd of 2024 when the Flames were hosting the Pittsburgh Penguins. Penguins had a 3-1 lead in the third period. Oh. And then Nazem Kadri turned everything on its side with one of the goals of the season, the kind of end-to-end rush that ended with just a perfect finish on Tristan Jarry. And that allowed the Flames to win the hockey game, because Kadri scored an incredible goal to make it 3-2. And then, just over 32 seconds later, Blake Coleman tied the game for the Flames, and then Yegor Sharangovich won the game with less than a minute to go in regulation. So what looked like a sure loss, with the Penguins leading 3-1 midway through the third period, turned into Nazem Kadri's highlight reel goal, which was the moment for me. Then Coleman right afterwards, and then Sharangovich wins it. Bonkers comeback for the Flames on March 2nd. That also just missed the cut on our top five.
Now I feel kind of bad for leaving it out, because that wasn't just a Flames goal of the year candidate. That was an NHL goal of the year candidate.
Sure,
because it started, as you mentioned, it was almost a full 200-foot effort where he pokes the puck around one Penguins forward and then gains steam, busts wide, threads it around and tucks it around the goal. Like, that was goal of the year from a Flames perspective, I would suggest.
One more time, though, our top five moments. Number five, Edmonton doesn't win the Stanley Cup. Number four, the Flames draft Zane Parekh. Number three, Dustin Wolf's first career shutout. Number two, Michael Backlund's 1,000th game. And your number one moment for 2024, opening night in Vancouver. That was a lot of fun. That'll start to wrap us up on Flames Talk this hour. Thanks to Shan Vergier, outstanding producer. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.